Welcome to the September 12th edition of the Strategic Command, of the Strategic Planning Committee. My name is Jim Dingman, and we're going to have a open meeting today where we're going to bring people in to talk about the underwriting motion. Here, pro and con. Before I want to do that, John, let's do the roll call.
Okay. James Dingman.
Here.
Hold on a second. And Heather Gray.
Here.
Donna Grimes. Julie Hewitt.
Here.
Julia Kennard.
Julia has been excused permanently from this.
Okay, good. James McFadden.
James is not here.
Elizabeth von Guten.
Elizabeth. Here.
Yes, and Susan Young.
Susan is excused. She needs to go to see Karen Armstrong.
And then other non-members, Alex is not going to be here. Chris Borey. Not here. Lyndon Foley is here. Lyndon.
And Stephanie is not here also.
Right, and Lawrence Reyes. Okay.
Lyndon. Lawrence was going to come. He's not a member. He was going to come.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, you can pull that down, Otis. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. So we have
Jim Sagerton as well is here.
Yes. Yes, we got him. Okay.
And hold on 1 second. Lyndon was here. So where did he go? All right. I guess he's coming back. Okay.
All right, so we have a quorum, and we're going to have a discussion. Basically, the bulk of what we're going to do today is have a discussion about the underwriting motion, and we've opened it up to everybody to talk about this. But I wanted to just go over some items that we'll quickly go through. Report on programming. Myself and Heather will give a few-minute update on that. Report on the NFT, I think there's a little progress on that. Lyndon can talk about that. I think there's been a roadblock removed. And if Chris comes, he can talk about the bond issue, where we're at with that. And then we'll have, essentially, the bulk of the meeting, we'll have a discussion with everybody, and it'll be open. We're not going to do public comment, but, you know, everybody will be talking as equals here about this. We will keep order, you know, just try to be reasonable. We don't want to have everybody pontificate endlessly, but we do want to have a discussion, not just some rigid public comment. So,
Chair.
Yes.
I have a question. When you say this meeting is open, exactly what do you mean?
Well, we're going to be having people coming in to talk about the underwriting issue.
As guests or just?
As public comment, they will be coming in to discuss this because, as you know, there's a lot of people all have all sorts of different opinions about it. So that's what we intend to do. All right. All right. Anyway, first.
Question.
Yes.
Question.
Go on, Beth.
Given that there has already been a vote on the resolution and it's passed already and it's a done deal, why are we taking further input?
Well, because we have had people talk about this, have different opinions about it, and I felt that it was important to have a discussion about this. We were going to do this anyway today if we'd already scheduled a meeting for that purpose. This was basically to have a discussion about it, and that's the reason.
Then the flip side of that question is, then why have we already taken a vote if we're still taking input?
Well, because...
Why was that done before we got to this point?
Well, frankly, there were people who didn't come, so we weren't able to get quorum, but we also felt that this issue should be discussed and other issues should be discussed. And it's important, I think, to have occasionally meetings where the public is involved.
I've got to ask a question, though. May I ask a question, Mr. Chair? How is the public going to know? Because there's no information on KPFTX. Did you put it in the agenda?
I did.
Okay. Well, I would like just like to say, since I'm not a member, I would like to make my 5-minute underwriting speech. at the earliest possible time because,
well,
as I said, it is a drinking time here in Texas,
right,
and
we'll let you do that, Mr. McClay. Yes,
thank you. Thank you.
Yes, I have serious concerns about the whole process that this committee has been following with irregular meetings on irregular days at irregular times and votes taken at those meetings, whether people can make an irregular meeting or not. It's especially a concern given that the officers can make up such a significant portion of this committee, and we are obliged at many other meetings too. And so I object to what seems to me to have been a premature vote on this issue at an irregular meeting when I, for one, wasn't able to be here because of prior commitments. When, in fact, we're still leaving the door open to further comment, and so it's not clear why that vote couldn't have been reserved for today. Thank you.
I'll submit my statement in writing, obviously. You know, it wouldn't be welcome here. So I'll catch you later, guys.
All right. Duly noted, and as we mentioned when we passed this last time, we knew that it was going to be a work in motion, and in fact, others can contribute and argue about it at later dates. That's why we're doing this tonight. Okay? In other words, it's not like the Ten Commandments coming off Mount Sinai. It's something that can be looked at and revised, or changed, or altered.
James, with an inquiry?
Go on, James.
Who was that person who wanted to make a statement and then left?
That was Mr. McClay. That was Mr. McClay.
Oh, that was Otis.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I just wanted to, this is an agenda. I will repeat it again, a short report on programming, short report on the status of the NFTs. And if Chris is here, where we're at with the bonds, and then we'll discuss and debate and talk about the underwriting motion, which will hopefully address the concerns that you have, Beth. In any event, any objections to that? All right, hearing none, let me just first go through the program. Yes, Beth? You have your hand up?
I think it's up from the last time. I do think that if you're going to introduce unusual elements to a standing committee, that you should probably clear it with the rest of the committee. At least get input first before assuming and announcing that that's what we're going to do.
What unusual elements are you talking about, Beth?
Opening the meeting to public, so the bulk of the meeting to public comment, especially on an item that's already been decided.
All right. As I said, when we passed this motion the last time when you were not able to attend, we made it clear that we were going to be open to have other people talk about it. So hopefully that answers the question. We do want other people to chime in on it. Okay? And that was clear when we even passed it. All right. So is it okay if I proceed?
Just a point of order, Jim. Yeah. The next item on the agenda would be approving the minutes from the last meeting from September 6th.
All right. Have you sent that around, John?
Yeah, I sent it out, yesterday.
All right. And what dates are they?
It's just September 6th, so last Tuesday's meeting.
All right. Okay, I so moved. Moved to approve those minutes. Any opposition? Okay, without any opposition, they're passed. Thank you, John.
Okay.
All right, now let me move to report on programming. Heather, do you want to add to what you're up to at the programming committee, how we're working with all this? Thank you.
Well, one of the primary things we're talking about, actually, is having national news program. So we haven't yet had a definitive statement about it, but I'm hoping that that'll happen tomorrow. We've been talking about this for a few meetings now, And what we wanted to do is coordinate this with all the Pacifica stations, but also link in the affiliate stations as well on news programs, actually. So, and I'm hoping that after the meeting we have tomorrow that it'll be more definitive, and then we can actually give this definitive statement to the PNB and to this committee and other committees as well. So the other thing we're going to be talking about tomorrow is that we're hoping on having a national effort also on Pacifica stations and the affiliate stations on October the 4th to have special programs about political prisoners here in the United States. So we're going to have that discussion as well. And the reason we're wanting to do this on October the 4th is because that is the birthday of Jamil El-Amin, who's been in prison for 20 years now for a crime that somebody else has admitted to doing. So it's actually a killing in Atlanta policeman, and somebody else admitted to this killing in court, actually. So anyway, we're going to have a discussion about having a national program on political prisoners. So that's about all I can say right now, Jim.
All right, thank you. I'll just add that last week the affiliates director, Ursula Runberg, had a very interesting discussion about covering the midterms. And the ad hoc working group of this committee is going to sponsor a discussion on that nationwide about how to handle midterm elections, et cetera, and help spark that to be done throughout the network and the affiliates. Hopefully people talk about different ideas about that. Also, we'll be doing a discussion on public affairs programming in the next 2 weeks, and other events planned is on October 8th. We're going to start to bring people in from the outside talking about issues of programming, and that will be Mark Fisher, who's the cultural affairs editor of the Washington Post. So that's it for the programming. Any comments or questions or from anybody?
Okay. Yeah, Chair, this is James with an inquiry. Yes. What you were just describing is what the programming committee is going to be doing?
No, remember we set up that ad hoc working group. So the ad hoc working group of the Strategic Planning Committee, remember we were trying to figure out a way to do the task force thing. So those are the kind of
That's
things.
That's what the ad hoc planning group is going to be doing. The yeah. focus of this committee when it was created was on the short-term financial emergency that we have inside Pacifica. That's what we're going to be spending the bulk of the main committee meetings.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. I just wanted to separate that out. Okay, so let's move. If there's any other questions, I just wanted to move to a short report by Lyndon on the NFT issue. I think there's been some movement on that, Lyndon, or has there?
Well, I believe the last word we had was last Tuesday when Stephanie told us that she had talked with Mark and basically instructed him to get the material to us, and I have not heard a single word since then. So he is just thumbing his nose at us, in my opinion, and we have made absolutely zero progress in the last 7 days.
Yeah, this is James with a point of order or point of information.
Yeah.
I just wanted Lyndon to know, in case he didn't, that Mark, maybe I shouldn't do this publicly, but...
Mark is ill, I understand, right?
He is recovering, so hopefully that will pick up.
We were told that a week ago, James.
Yeah, so I think he was seriously ill and suffering from a serious condition.
It was COVID, from what we were told.
Well, again, I don't know if we're supposed to say that publicly.
Well, it's, Stephanie said it publicly and with his permission.
If it's out there, then it's out there.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. All right, well, we'll see. We'll try to keep on top of that, Lyndon, to get that solved. And Chris isn't here, so we don't have a report on the bond issue. So hearing none, I'm going to move right to this discussion on the underwriting. Now, just to let people know on the stream, if there are members of the public, listener members, who want to join this debate, the Zoom connection is posted on KPTFX, and they can come in and join that. And I'd like to at least let the first person here, Patrick Smith. Patrick, do you want to unmute and talk about? Is this something you wanted to talk about today, Patrick? Okay, well, you don't have to talk about it. But let's start. Beth, you were concerned about this issue, so please start the discussion that you were wanting to participate in a week ago.
I'm going to reserve all my comment for the review period after this has been implemented. I'm done. Excuse me.
Okay. All right. Does anybody else want to chime in on this issue? Otis, are you there? Can we get your 5-minute speech on this?
I think he left, Jim.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, he left to go enjoy himself.
Okay.
Well, Heather, why don't you start off with this? Because, again, you know, we're getting some of the critiques of this. I know that Steve Brown wrote a interesting little piece that Alex responded to called The Slippery Slope. Do we start the slippery slope? And Alex said, well, okay. He retorted with the slippery slope counter-argument. But I was just curious, from your perspective, what you guys have done in terms of underwriting in Atlanta and what you've learned are the good things and bad things of this.
Well, I guess I'm repeating myself consistently on this. Yes, we at WRFG in Atlanta, Radio Free Georgia, we do underwriting. And, you know, I need to say that my work, actually, my professional work has primarily been with the Federation of Southern Cooperatives, where I served as the communications director for 25 years. Now, the Federation is the primary organization in the country working with black farmers. It's licensed in 16 southern states. But we assist black farmers in holding onto their land and helping them get the resources that they needed and so forth. But the other important aspect of this was in cooperative economic development. And when I began to learn about cooperatives, everything kind of shifted gears for me. I realized the importance of small businesses just overall. So that helped me shift gears as far as getting support for community radio stations is concerned. Because I realized that, yes, we are community radio stations. We are a part of the community, and another integral part of the community is small businesses. So it just makes sense to me that we should be working together, actually. We as community radio stations should be supporting these small businesses in our communities. We're not talking about huge corporate entities. We're talking about small businesses. And there does have to be some kind of criteria, which I think that Alex has been really good developing in his proposal. About this, but not huge businesses. I mean, I know this has been the challenge that we've had or think about having actually has taken place in a lot of the other, more corporate controlled media entities. That's not us. We are there to support small businesses in our communities. And I think it's just a wonderful alliance. And also, it would include universities as well that might be having events that they might want to announce on our radio station that pay for an announcement. So there are other kinds of entities as well in our community that we could and do associate with. And that's what we do at our station in Atlanta. And as I've mentioned a number of times at Pacifica meetings, I'll never forget when we started doing this, actually, when we started doing underwriting, going somewhere in the city of Atlanta, and this woman came up to me and she said, oh, Heather, I'm eternally grateful to WRFG because were it not for WRFG, I would not have known about this small restaurant in East Atlanta. And I thought, oh, that's absolutely wonderful. So that's all I can say, Jim. I think it's wonderful to have this alliance for us to be working together with other aspects in our communities, actually.
All right, thank you. Jim, if you're there, I'd like you to outline what is the status of the financial situation at the foundation in general, because one of the reasons why we're even talking about this is due to the crisis we're going through financially. And I'm wondering, Jim, what you could share or shed light on us as the chair of the Finance Committee at the national level, what your opinions are of this issue.
Jim, first of all, I'm going to say that I'm really not sure what you're doing here, but, you know, you're conducting a meeting as if it was a radio interview. You didn't ask me ahead of time to bring any material on this. What is your question again?
Well, I just was wondering if you could share with us what your feelings are about this underwriting issue in the light of all these fiscal problems we have.
Well, my position on underwriting used to be, well, it still is, that nothing is worse than underwriting except going out of business. And that's basically where we are. We've hit a wall. Our revenue does not meet our expenses. We have $500,000 in immediately due payables. We don't have any apparent way to make those payments at this time. We are in an extreme financial situation, and we need to be realistic about diversifying our income streams. It's not that like underwriting is going to be a panacea and it's going to solve all our problems. We're talking about modest pilot projects to test out underwriting. This motion has a sunset clause in it. It will expire at a certain date. And it's an attempt to see what's going to happen. People throw around the word corporation as if it's, you know, an evil incarnate. And, you know, we're going to have corporate fundraising and corporate underwriting. Pacifica Foundation is a corporation. We're incorporated in the state of California as a 501c3 tax exempt charitable educational foundation. So, you know, we're not talking about General Motors or U.S. Steel or Microsoft coming in here. First of all, we don't think they would want to underwrite for us. And second of all, there's strong language in this motion that sets out policy preclusions, you know, corporations that represent environmental destruction, corporations that, you know, practice bad union policies here or elsewhere around the world. Those kinds of things are prohibited by this motion. So, yeah, it's a small potential addition to our revenue at a time when we are in extreme need, and I'm in favor of trying the experiment. However, I do believe there is a slippery slope, and we have to be careful for it. We can't just say there's no such thing as a slippery slope. There certainly is. But I don't think there's going to be no rush. Coca-Cola is not going to rush in to underwrite our programs. Trust me.
All right. Does anybody else want to add their comments to this? Yeah, Jim.
As the motion is written, I just would like some clarifying language performed on it, so we know exactly what we're voting on. And I got my questions answered last time, so I know what that is. But from the way the motion's written, you know, I don't think it's clear. So in the second line of the motion, it says stations participating are required. So that sounds like, you know, somehow stations get to choose whether they're going to participate. But it didn't say who at the station gets to choose. You know, is it the GM that makes that decision, or is it the local station board that makes that decision? And the answer I got last time was that the GM does, and the local station board plays no role at all in this whole effort. And I think we just, you know, ought to be clear about that. If we're gonna pass this, we shouldn't leave that ambiguous. So people know exactly what this means to, cause it will, you know, some people will argue that it will impact, local control, you know, by the local station board, or at least some level of oversight by the local station board. So I think that ought to be. And I guess a little further down, it says this resolution will expire unless renewed. Perhaps it's obvious that that unless renewed is renewed by the PNB. So maybe that's sort of obvious. And if we go down a few more paragraphs to the stations within the program will accept. See your editing. If you go down a little further, there were stations in the program will accept underwriting based on needs of the stations. It's kind of ambiguous. What is it? Stations in the program. Who are the stations? What it really is that we're talking about there is the GM again. The GM will make these decisions, and we should just, I think, be clear on it. You know, that the local stations boards play no role in the way this motion is written. And in saying that, I'm not making a value judgment on the motion, because I have thoughts on that as is, but I think it's important that the verbiage be clear, you know, that when we say stations of Prim will accept, what we're really talking about is the GM. The GM, at least the way it was described, has all the decision making, in terms of accepting these. And it sounds like, I think, that the oversight of whether the GM, whether a contract the GM goes into with some underwriter, I guess it's possible for the executive director as the main role in saying, wait a minute, this contract doesn't match our policy, which was written, you know, in terms of, the various caveats in this motion down further, which say, you know, we're not going to accept fossil fuel or any environment and so on. I think that says that somewhere, but the implied thing is that the ED was kind of will be that, play that role. And I just would like the motion as, you know, if we're going to modify it today at all, I would like to see those things just be clarified so people know exactly what that means.
All right. Yeah, Jim Sagerton.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to agree with James McFadden, and I support that effort to tighten up the language where necessary. And I guess since we've already passed it, the place to do that would be the PNB. Although I suppose we could edit it here and adopt the motion to amend a previously passed motion. But yeah, I support the kinds of efforts that James is talking about.
All right, maybe we can come up with suggested language before we're finished. Does anybody else want to chime in on this? Julie?
Well, I'll just say that I'm multitasking at the moment, but I've been listening, and I do, you know, tend to agree with James McFadden that, you know, there are some things that could be tidied up about this language, right? And I'm totally in favor of that.
Okay.
Because I think it's going to have to ultimately get cleaned up anyway, so.
Right.
And I'd sent some comments a long time ago, and I just simply haven't had a chance to see whether they got incorporated or not.
All right, well, as you multitask, maybe you can look at this again. Patrick, you don't have to contribute or say anything if you don't want to. All right.
My hand is up.
Go on, Beth.
Yes. This is something I've worked on for well over the last year as part of the Development Task Force. It's underwriting is something about which I have some reservations, but feel that it's important that we find a way to move forward with it cautiously at this point. Therefore, I would have liked to be able to support this motion, but from my perspective, it's really seriously not ready. And the time to put effort into wordsmithing, wordcrafting, is before you pass the motion, not afterwards. You know, afterwards, it then belongs to the next body up. So both Jim Sagerton and Jim McFadden expressed, articulate clearly a lot of my reservations. I'm not going to try to wordsmith a document in the middle of a live committee. I think that's the kind of thing that should be done between committee meetings and in a preparation for a meeting that is predictable, where everyone is available to attend, or most people can. I can set aside time. I can commit time to be there. So I lament the passage of the motion as it is. Thank you.
Well, what we're doing right now is, you know, wordsmithing it, if you will. And it's not necessarily going to go up to the board this week. So there is opportunity to, quote, wordsmith it, if you will. But anyway, yes, Heather, did you want to say something?
I guess I'm just going to repeat myself because I didn't know if we were about to end the discussion on this. But I'm absolutely thrilled that Pacifica is finally thinking of doing this. So thank everyone actually who's been working on it. But I'm just so thankful. Finally, there might be this relationship with other aspects in our community. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, Jim.
All right. Well, there are two at this point. Jim McFadden, Jim Sagerton, and Beth have pointed out the different aspects of where there should be more precision. And the question here is the wording, the GM as a decision maker, the LSB, where the LSB is, etc. Is there any other parts of this document that people want to raise questions about?
I have three hands raised, so.
Yeah. Well, let's make Mr. McFadden.
So one other thing is I wanted to ask Stephanie, explicitly whether she thought, you know, so there was kind of this template for an underwriting agreement, you know, which has not a lot to it, you know, for a contract. But maybe it's enough. I mean, I kind of wanted her opinion on whether this contract template was appropriate, or whether it, you know, normally I would think a contract, you know, just think about like whenever you sign on to some app, they got 20 pages of, you know, techno gibberish, which you're never going to read, you know, but that stuff's there, you know, for a reason. And in particular, I thought it was, I heard in the meeting last week that, either party could opt out of the contract at any time, so that if the GM, you know, initiates a contract like this, that when it's brought to the executive director's attention, and if the executive director thinks the contract is outside the bounds of what we believe are underwriting, that we can avoid the contract. I mean, and maybe there's something in there with verbiage like that, but it just seems like there's a bunch of those kinds of things that would be in a contract like this. It would be a little more extensive, but perhaps I'm just mistaken in my belief. So I'd still like to hear what Stephanie has to say if she's taken a close look at this.
I think, yeah, we were talking about that, so I wonder where that would be. So you're talking about, let me put this in here. So every underwriting agreement must be submitted to the executive director of Pacifica. So your point, Jim, just repeat your point so I could highlight that.
Well, if, you know, one is the executive director, you need some kind of, supervision to see that a contract that a GM writes, you know, matches. So it needs to be somebody at one level away from it. And at least what Alex said was the executive director would play that role. And that's, you know, should just be clear, you know, and so at some, you know, maybe monthly or something like that, when the GM talks to the executive director and say, yeah, here we have these underwriting contracts, with these places, and the GM and the executive director would need to look them over and say, okay, yeah, that matches. And, because you need some kind of reporting system, you know, so this doesn't just get out of hand. And along that same line, I think there needs to be something in here in the contract that allows, you know, either party to void the contract without any, penalties, you know, because you wouldn't want to be in a contract where you get sued if you decide to void the contract, you know, because it has a start and an end date. And I don't know why it needs a start date and a stop date unless, you know, if it's a start date and some cadence, you know, maybe it's, for this, whatever the underwriting. Anyway, it just seems like there needs to be some kind of a, ability. So if a contract turns out, you know, imagine we write a contract with some local business and it gets gobbled up by some conglomerate that we don't, you know, that doesn't match ours. You know, we need to be able to get out of the contract. Or you find out that, oh, wait a minute, that local bit that we thought was a local business really isn't. It's really owned by, you know, some Wall Street firm. And so it seems like there just needs to be some kind of, language in the contract about those kinds of issues.
Some sort of safe exit strategy.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, Jim Sagerton. You had your hand up, Jim?
Sorry, that was from before. I'll put it down.
Chris, you got any, you wanted to comment on this? Yes, Beth, you have your hand up? Elizabeth? Or is it still up from before?
Sorry, I was muted. No, it's from before.
Okay.
I'll bring up one more thing. Jim, I'll bring up one more thing.
Yeah, go on.
I was trying not to. And that is, and I can't remember if this is in there, but I didn't think it was, is kind of the way it's written, the GMs, you know, will work out the contract and report back to the ED, and you know, the ED kind of will look over the contract, decide if it sort of fits the policy from the motion, and then, but you'd like, I think, some kind of report to the PNB on the effectiveness, and maybe we just wait a year. I mean, this thing is kind of the way it's written, is you don't do anything for a year, but maybe we might want something a little more often, you know, it doesn't have to be even monthly, but you know, two or three months or something. I mean, what, you know, and and maybe it's a blank, and that's part of the motion which might get modified when it gets to the P&B. But I don't know what would be appropriate. Clearly, you don't have to do this at every P&B meeting, but and maybe every 3 months would be enough. So we get a sense. Once this is passed, 3 months later, we just hear a little report from Stephanie. And it could just be off the top. It doesn't have to be a big formal report, but just kind of hear back on it on some regular basis. And probably Stephanie would do that anyway. So maybe it's not needed to be in the motion, but, it's just another thought about like how to make it kind of clear how this will go forward. So we don't wait 12 months. I don't want to be 12 months down the line, and then at a meeting we hear about it and have to vote on it. It'd be kind of nice to hear some things along the way, and perhaps as we get reports back every few months, some feedback from the PNB to the GMs might be beneficial. Who knows? Probably not, but might be.
So you're talking about perhaps a quarterly function or a 2 month function?
Yeah, quarterly I think would probably be it could be a pretty short,
Yeah.
And it's not to go into every contract. It's just to kind of give a general sense of how it's working. Station A is not doing underwriting. Station B is doing a lot of underwriting and they're bringing in some decent money and perhaps that just comes out of the financials, but it'd be nice to have it broken out so we see if this program is working. And we have a heads up before we have to vote on the renewal.
All right. That sounds like good. Yeah, Chris, go on, Chris.
Yeah, so I'm wondering how FundRent, I hope this doesn't take us too far away from the core subject here, but does fundraising in general at Pacifica have this kind of standard I think it's a valuable tool to evaluate the efficacy of fundraising, but do we ever do that in this organization? And if so, how is that responsibility handed down? That's kind of the bigger question, but I'm just wondering whether this is something that's routinely done in Pacifica, and if so, how it's done, because we might be able to borrow the language from that.
Yes, Beth.
At the National Development Task Force, we do an informal version of that. We usually open every meeting with an informal report from Stephanie, followed by questions and answers. And beyond that, we'll go into a discussion, usually about a designated topic. The last two have specifically been about underwriting. We had 15 people at each one, if I remember right, and very robust discussions with lots of detail. Stephanie has been quite generous with her time in attending every one of those meetings from the first that she got here and being quite forthright in her answers. If we wanted to, I intend to continue to ask her to invite her. I usually check in with her ahead of the meeting to be sure that we're in sync. See if there's anything I need to know or anything she needs to know from us. I intend to continue doing that, and if this passes, then there will be continue to be widespread interest in it, no doubt, including in what the effect is, how it's working out, what works, what doesn't, how we would want to tweak it if we, any kind of course correction is necessary. Now, that's a task force. It's not a committee. So you're not going to get motions out of that task force. So it was specifically set up as a task force. I guess it was before my time, but I understand it was the intention was to avoid all the politics that get so caught up in all our committee work. But anybody here or anywhere really is more than welcome to attend those and take part in those discussions, bring your questions, bring your comments. And I do report on a regular basis to the PNB. Usually there's not a lot to report other than that we have met again and what our focus is. But if there were more substantive reports requested, we could do that. Thank you.
Jim? Can I offer a follow-up question?
Sure, go on, Chris.
Yeah, since Beth was so fulsome with that, would it be possible to empower them, I guess, with evaluating the efficacy of this proposal? Does the task force have the bandwidth to do that, I guess, would be another question. Thank you.
Jim, real quick. There's no link on the KPFXT this meeting if you were thinking people were going to be able to call in.
Really?
All that's posted is the motion.
Wow. I thought I put the Zoom link in the whole thing.
PDF of the motion. I just checked it because I saw somebody complaining.
Really? I put the Zoom link for people to participate. Oh, wow. Let me go back in. I did that last night. Weird. So it's not there. Weird. Okay, I'll do it again. Chris raises it. I'll do that as we're talking. Chris, sorry about that, folks. I did post it, and I wonder where the hell it went. Chris poses an interesting question about the efficacy of fundraising. That's a serious issue that we all know is really, really prominent right now in terms of how do we evaluate the fundraising.
And John's for the stack on this as well.
Yeah, go on, John.
Because several stations are also launching initiatives to reach out to what they would call high-value donors, right? So what would we do if Donald Trump, for example, wants to give money to a station? Like, I don't think we have guidelines in place. I'm not necessarily sure we need guidelines, but I think it's something that we should encompass into this overall discussion, not only for underwriting, but for high-value donors as well.
Well, the efficacy of the fundraising is a serious issue because, you know, I don't have to tell anybody, we're in the middle of dealing with all these different levels of catastrophes that we're trying to monitor and turn around. So what works and doesn't work is a real important issue. And how to improve it is another one. I'm going to go to KPTFA. Slower talking. Chris, you wanted to follow up with that?
Jim, I'm sorry. There's an alarm going off in the building here. I'm going to have to figure out what's going on. I got distracted there. I'm sorry. I'll be right back.
Oh yeah, you're right. I did post the Zoom link in there.
Down at the bottom, you have to hit update.
Oh, I did do that. I'll do that again. John, just take over for a second. I'll just get this link thing done.
Okay.
The other thing is, Jim Sagerton raised the question of like, okay, so we're talking about one fundraising option, which in reality, immediately cannot be considered a silver bullet. It's just going to be a trickle of money coming in. But what else do people think in this situation we can do to creatively think about how to get out of this? Other people are talking about, you know, massively mobilizing people in every signal area to join the stations, to link to the contemporary struggles that are going on, which I don't disagree with, frankly. But whether, along with this idea that, you know, we're going to send up to the PMB, we're going to tweak this, what ideas do other people have right now as I take care of this problem? Because I don't know why this didn't, I do apologize, I don't know why the Zoom link didn't come in there. What other ideas do people have? Anybody?
My hand is up, I think.
Go on, Liz.
This is the focus of the National Development Task Force. This is what we do every month, is review potential revenue streams and who's doing what, and what's working, and where the interest is these days, or the focus, or the potential. We get a good number of people out each month, but not that many directors. I think if we had more attention from directors who are in a position to actually implement activities, it might make a bigger difference. On a related topic, the National Association of Development Professionals has a set templates for policies for nonprofits to develop on fundraising ethics and principles and what we do and don't do. Pacifica doesn't have anything like that right now. I had initially brought those forward, I guess it was close to a couple of years ago when I first reached the national level, and I didn't get much traction on it then, but I've had inquiries again recently. I'm going to bring those forward. I haven't decided which venue yet, but I think we need those. Major donors individual donors or like family foundations or whatever, expect to see policies like that in place. And when they don't, it suggests to them that, there's a lot we don't know about the philanthropic world. And Charity Navigator and GuideStar would smile on that effort. We can start with the template and tweak them to adapt them to our purposes and idiosyncrasies. We don't have them at hand at the moment, but within the next month I will bring them forward. They have come up in conversation here recently, so you can look forward to those.
Okay. Well, the foundation, see, my problem with the dependency, some have had this dependency thinking that there would be this open sesame of foundations supporting the stations, and I always was skeptical about that given what has happened in the past 10 to 15 years. I'm not saying one shouldn't apply to foundations, but I know, and by the way, the Zoom, I can see that for those of you who are listening, the Zoom information is now there. I do apologize. You can get in there. I guess I didn't hit the update button. That's where these audited financial reports are so important. But again, right now is the time to exploit the ability to get foundation money, because we are in compliance this year with the AFRs. And I'm wondering, in the development committee or elsewhere, what has been done to what are people doing locally that people know to take advantage of this? Because now, theoretically, we can actually apply to foundations and get money. And I'm not thinking we're going to get, like, huge amounts, because my experience with foundations is they are not going to pay for operational deficits. I mean, that I know. I've listened to too many people tell me that. But, again, people can come up with projects or ideas for radio content that will be attractive. So I'm wondering what has been – anybody have any idea what's been going on or what people have been doing throughout the network?
Do you want to hear from the National Development Task Force again?
Yes, please.
That is something we track. Stephanie updated our pages on both GuideStar and Charity Navigator as soon as she got here. That was one of the very first things she did. One of the reasons our score was so low on both of those nonprofit rating sites was that no one had updated them for years, which is just simple oversight on our part. So she was able to improve our score on GuideStar almost immediately. Charity Navigator has a window of opportunity to do it.
Good time.
To do that. And so we had to wait. I think we are still at this point waiting for that to roll around for the year. But she has her eye on that, and that will be done. Yes, we have the audits in place, and that helps. But the problem is the content of the audits, which say that we are effectively tanking. And so that's a problem in approaching most conventional foundations. They're going to look at that and have the same concern expressed in the audits about whether we're actually a going concern, whether we can continue in business. There are some sources of funding that don't have that as a criteria. I've been pointing for more than a year to the FEMA grants available for critical infrastructure, because we do qualify as critical infrastructure and would qualify for a lot of their funding, I believe. And I think that a lot of that would be on the scale of the PPP. It's federal money. It's big money, especially given, I'm thinking in terms of KPFK, certainly because that's the station I'm most familiar with, and the largest signal west of the Mississippi, or strongest signal west of Mississippi, attracts attention. You know, emergency services have a vested interest in seeing to it that we're functional should any emergencies hit. And they have money available specifically for our infrastructure and security, the kinds of things that we actually need, because pretty much all of our infrastructure is at least a couple of generations deep in deferred maintenance. And so that I've waited for that window to roll around, and I forwarded that information to Stephanie last month. We might request a report from her about that at whatever next upcoming meeting you want to, whether it's this one or the PNB or the National Development Task Force or wherever. There is a window. We missed it last year because there was no one really positioned or prepared to take on that application. It's a federal application, and they're usually rather complicated and exacting, but so you have to really make the effort. So there's that. There are some organizations, some funders give for purposes for, there's a whole category referred to as capacity building for things like correcting or improving governance or training boards or things like that. And they are also less dependent on the robust, good financial standing of an organization. It's that's what they're trying to address. They would take an interest in an organization in need. I don't know what Stephanie may have done, which ones she may have looked at in that way. We've spoken of it in passing. We could ask her about that too. There have been, listener Bruce Grief on Long Island has mentioned more than once that there are, funders specifically interested in preserving archives, and they are less concerned about what our current financial standing is, and in fact might be more sympathetic if they know that we're hard up, because that puts any archives we have that much more at risk. But again, though, they would have to be sought out and applied for. There may be other categories like that, but those are the top three that come to my mind in the moment. But I think that for now, foundations per se, especially like conventional foundations, unless they already love us and give to us on a regular basis, they're not likely to take us up when we look like such a risky proposition. Everything about us looks precarious right now. Therefore, we're more likely to find favor among those who do know us and those individuals who, angels, who know us and love us and who can be approached and with by someone in a position to make a direct and significant ask. And that Stephanie would be the one in the best position to do that. Overall, there may be anybody who has individual connections with such potential people. Do please let us know. I try to, as people identify themselves through whatever source, the Development Task Force or wherever, I try to open discussion, open the channels of communication with people who might be in a potential position to give, because usually those are relationships developed over time. I don't know whose line is open.
Sue, you have to mute that, John. You have to mute.
Colin Johnson, I just muted you, just so you know, because you have background noise.
Okay, go on, Beth. You're finishing.
So that's off the top of my head. That's what I can. That's how I would summarize the our situation in terms of grants or major gifts. At the same time, I look at our total debt right now of a very few million dollars, and that's honestly not that much. There's another nonprofit I've worked out with out here, the Channel Islands Restoration. I've led work groups out to the Channel Islands here to do restoration out on the islands for the last 12 years or so. And they had there was a parcel of land they wanted to buy up the coast here in Santa Barbara earlier this year. And in about 4 or 5 months flat, they raised $18 million. And did it. And just boom, done. And so it's our networks to do those relationships. That all happens through relationships, and ours have suffered over the years because of our poor behavior, because of the discontinuity in management, because we're politically difficult even within ourselves, and we need to work on all of that. And to the extent that I can, through the various venues, I am. And anybody else who wants to do the same, please feel free to be in touch, and everybody's invited to the next Development Task Force meeting. We can work on it. Thank you. If anybody has questions, I'd be glad to take questions. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Beth. Those are very important questions there. The FEMA money, the ability to get grants to deal with the archives and other issues. Again, I can see we need different people working and pursuing those kind of questions.